Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. Last Saturday, I was interviewed on The Alternative Media by the rising star Farron Schoaf on his radio program on the Republic Broadcasting Network. And this week, we're going to hear that interview. Listen.
Hello and welcome to The Alternative Media. This is your Saturday broadcast where we discuss current events, politics, the disinformation, lies, deceit, and propaganda, the mainstream corporate-owned puppet media, and the fact that the federal government of the United States no longer has any resemblance whatsoever of representation of we the people. It is Saturday, September 21st, 2019. We're in hour two of the broadcast, and I'm glad to announce that I have joining me Kevin Alfred Strom. Mr. Strom, how are you doing today, sir?
I am very well. I apologize for the poor sound quality of this cell phone, but I had to be out in another city. I'm sitting here in the mountains of western Pennsylvania. It's beautiful. There's pine trees all around me, a crystal clear lake, but I have to use this cell phone to talk to you. I'll try to speak clearly.
You're coming in good. You're coming in good, and I want to thank you, one, for joining me today. And Kevin Alfred Strom does the podcast American Dissident Voices. You can find that on the website, nationalvanguard.org. I'd like to also add, if you're not doing so, you should check the website every day. It is a great source of news and information. I can guarantee you, you will see news and information on nationalvanguard.org that you won't find elsewhere. It really is that important. And you can listen to the podcast, which is published each Saturday. Now, it's been a while since we spoke, Kevin, and I just wanted to get a little bit of an update on your assessment of the Donald Trump presidency. We're seeing a lot of demonization of Iran. We're seeing warmongering. We've seen he has really embraced Israel. We are still being flooded with illegal aliens, and you were very early and rightly warning the Trumpsters, which I did get on the Trump wagon there and ride a little while. I've since stepped off the train, but I wanted to just get your assessment of reality today. What's your opinion?
Well, I think that my assessment, which really was also the assessment of Dr. William Pierce, although Dr. Pierce died in 2002, is the correct assessment. Dr. Pierce, many years ago, brought us the fact that Donald Trump was sent by the Republican Party to destroy the candidacy of David Duke. And David Duke, as many of your listeners are doubtlessly aware, is a real racial nationalist. And racial nationalism is the only thing that can save our country and save our culture and our race as a whole. It's exactly what is needed. And Donald Trump was sent in to help the Republican Party destroy that candidacy. And that made me suspicious of Trump's motives. Now, of course, people can change. But when I saw, as soon as he was inaugurated, immediately beginning to repudiate some of his more nationalist rhetoric that he uttered on the campaign, start to appoint neocons to his administration, start to appoint Christian Zionists to his administration, I felt quite vindicated. And it has been too long since we spoke, but since that time, I think my assessment has been proven more correct than ever. There's some Christian Zionist, I forget who it was, actually said that Donald Trump should be considered the king of the Jews, which I thought was pretty hilarious, but Trump himself endorsed that. So what more can I say? He still occasionally mumbles something about a wall, but there is no wall. He still occasionally says something that might be very, very mildly civic nationalist, and probably in an economic sense most of the time, not a racial sense. But he endlessly promotes the idea that we are a multicultural society, we're a multiracial society. His greatest achievements are lowering the black and mestizo unemployment rates, never a mention of white people. He makes speeches in which he hails the Holocaust survivors and talks about paths to citizenship as long as it's legal for non-whites. He's clearly not a racial nationalist, and his apparent opposition to the Jewish power structure during the campaign was just a Margaret Thatcher type of ploy to get the votes of racial nationalists. And I think there are two big things we can learn from this. Number one is don't believe anybody who comes from the power structure, Republican, Democrat, or just the power structure generally. They do not have our best interests at heart. And the second lesson is that we haven't succeeded as much as we need to succeed, but we white nationalists, we racial nationalists, have succeeded to the point where we're a group that has to be catered to, at least in rhetoric. And I think that's an achievement. So those are the two lessons I take away from this phony Donald Trump.
Wow, that's very interesting. Let me ask you this. Any surprise? I mean, I know you've been watching politics for a long time, but even I consider myself really jaded, but even I am kind of surprised to see a Beto O'Rourke saying, yes, I'm going to take your AR-15. Any surprise of how the unhinged left has just come out and it blatantly in your face espoused socialism, gun confiscation, giving illegal aliens free health care, something the American taxpayers, the native population doesn't have? Any surprise at all on your part of how the left is acting and reacting in this country?
Well, I think this country is becoming more polarized, and there's a sharper division than ever between the people who want to keep their rights to self-defense, people who want to have a recognizable American future, the white American future, where their grandchildren will look like them and carry on the same culture and genetic heritage, and those who want to burn all that and destroy it. And I think it's great. We need polarization. We need clear choices. We need the enemy to take his mask off and stop pretending to be a liberal and start saying what he really believed all along, and that is that we need to get rid of whites. And as long as we keep going in a direction of greater honesty, more and more white people are going to make the choice to take their own side. And that is exactly what we need. I will say, though, that I think that it's the fake conservative movement that creates this economic view of the world where one side is capitalist and the other side is socialist, and we have to oppose socialism. I think that people oppose socialism in this country, white people in particular, because socialism is a word that has come to mean taking away from the white people and giving to the blacks, the third worlders, and foreign countries, especially Israel. And it's rightfully, I suppose, become a dirty, or I won't say rightfully, it's understandably become a dirty word because it's used to steal our wealth, to take away from us, to diminish our future, and give to others who are our enemies or our competitors. And people hate that. They instinctively hate that, even when they don't fully understand it. However, I don't really think socialism is necessarily a bad thing. What does socialism mean? It doesn't necessarily mean communism or Bolshevism or anti-white hate, the way most people think of it today. It actually just means an organized society. It means being social-minded. Well, we should be social-minded. We should care about our society. We should care for our race and our people. And that's the function of government. And we should have an organized society. After all, in the competition between societies, who's going to win? The more unorganized or the more organized? Clearly the more organized. And we have some really sharp competitors in this world. Think of China, for example. We need to be organized. We need our own government. We need our own social network. So I'm not opposed to socialism, but it should be on a racial basis. So uh, I always like to bring that up because I think the dichotomy in this world between those who are going to win and those who are going to lose, those who are right and those who are wrong, is not economic. It's racial. So that's my view.
You know, in the first hour, I was discussing two stories. One is San Francisco movie theater is playing a movie, and the title of it is "Why Don't We Murder More White People?" And at the same time, we've got a Nigerian-born rap artist in Sweden. Sweden allowed him to immigrate there, and now he's a citizen. And he is encouraging black people to take over the whites, kill the whites, enslave the whites, rob the whites, and on and on. And we're seeing, and also in the first hour I did a story where they're having another one of these events where they exclude white people on college campuses. And one, I see this as, you know, they're doing this to normalize this, to get people to accept this, you know, more frequently in the media. There's no outrage. Now, the contrast would be if it was, if you turned this around, so to speak, there would be just public outcry. But I wanted to get your take on, you know, you're not allowed to even put up a sign that says it's okay to be white. It triggers the leftist media, which I think is hilarious, but at the same time, it is really the anti-white bias, the ability of rappers and other people in the media to say and really espouse all kinds of threatening language. We are seeing now something that we didn't see in the media just a few short years back, and I mean it is clear in your face anti-white bias. And I've been surprised that just people that I know that's not, you know, not political, but they're seeing this for themselves on TV. I'm talking about elderly people all across different genres or what have you. This anti-white bias in the media is just so, now it's continuous and blatant, and there's not any pushback, at least not from, you know, the Republicrats or the Democrats, or anywhere else, so to speak, other than on, you know, radio broadcasts like this and RBN and nationalvanguard.org that points these things out. But one, I wanted to get your opinion on the rise of it and the quantity of it, and then the American people digesting it.
Well, the first thing I would say is there is pushback. And there's quite a bit of pushback. It's just that it's not covered in the controlled media. It's not in the media sphere. If you're plugged into the media sphere, the demonstrations they highlight are anti-white or leftist demonstrations. The people they interview are people who either hate whites or are pathetic conservative apologizers for whites who don't really defend whites at all, and that gives you a very skewed view. If they do interview somebody from the National Alliance, who is a pro-white, which is the pro-white organization that nationalvanguard.org is a part of, they'll try to demonize or minimize. But mostly what they do is ignore the National Alliance. Mostly what they do is ignore what I think are literally hundreds of thousands of people now on social media and on comment sections on the Internet and other parts of the Internet. Hundreds of thousands of white people are pushing back. Maybe it's even in the millions now. I can tell you that NationalVanguard.org for the last year has seldom had a single month with fewer than a million page views from a quarter of a million people every month. So the pushback is bigger than you think. We're not as alone as you think, and the media tries to make us feel alone and feel powerless and feel like everything's going their way. Why? Because there's a certain percentage of the population that's very passive and timid. They just want to do what they think everybody else is doing. And so they want that passive and timid part of the population to think everything's going in an anti-white direction, so they'll go along with it. But it's not. It's we're growing. Our our power and our force and our voice is more something to be reckoned with than it has been in decades. So number one, we're not alone. It's not all going their way. They just want you to think that. Number two, the further they push this anti-white agenda, the more honest they're being, the more open they are about it, the more people they're going to send our way. So I love it. I think it's great. It's they've doubled down, and I think they're going to double down again. This demonization of white nationalism and white separatism is just it's a step too far, and I think they're going to just send people our way. The main thing we have to do is don't compromise. Don't apologize. Never apologize for being white. Never apologize for being pro-white. Never apologize for being white nationalist, because that is exactly what we need. It's the only thing that will allow us to survive. So we need to be absolutely stalwart and firm in the face of all of their attacks, and we will win. I believe that.
You know, you made a point in one of our previous interviews, and I thought it was, from your perspective, you know, having been involved in this for a long time, I thought it was really a remarkable statement. And that was that, you know, you got to looking around and you saw that there had just been an explosion of these various websites. And there really has. I mean, even in last week, I found a few new ones. There's one called Winter Watch. There's just a variety of information out there that wasn't. It wasn't there, you know, just a few short years ago. And I think it lends a lot of credibility to what you just said. And what's happening is, well, yesterday, they were having some more white supremacist hearings. Candace Owens was back in Washington, which I find ironic that, you know, she was there. The Congress doesn't have anything better to do. With all the problems we got, they're still having hearings talking about white supremacy. And Candace Owens told the whatever group in Congress that was holding it yesterday, that she didn't even rank that in the top 100 problems of black people. So they do keep pushing it, and it is exploding with information and podcasts, and that is the pushback. You're exactly right, and I believe as they try to push red flag laws, as they continue this massive censorship on the internet, I mean, just blatant in-your-face censorship in every direction, that it's going to make more and more people be like, well, you know, what exactly is the message here? What does National Vanguard say? Why do they make it to where you can't have a sign that says it's okay to be white? Because anyone can see through the fact that if you're a great black activist, you're revered in the media. You're reverenced as doing a good thing. And I'm not against that. I'm for anybody working to promote their race and their race's children's future. I'm for that. But the hypocrisy is that if white people do anything at all, then they are to be vinaigrated and to be, exposed as just a dirt and rotten scoundrel. So it, I think you're right too. They're going to double down. They're going to keep on. They're relentless. It's going to continue in this direction. I got a question for you. Epstein's death. Is he in hell or is he in Haifa?
Well, I don't know, but I will say that anyone who believes the official story that all of those cameras just magically quit working, and that it was pure coincidence that the people who were supposed to be watching him stopped watching him at just the right moment, I think you have to be very, very foolish to believe that. And in fact, I think most people don't believe it, despite the fact that the media very quickly switched from apparent suicide to suicide in their news stories. I think very few people actually believe the story, and it's just another break in the edifice of the controlled media. People have lost confidence in it, and this is just another thing where they lose confidence in the government, they lose confidence in the media, and they lose confidence in official stories generally. And the question, of course, that the media are not asking and everybody else is asking is, where are the blackmail tapes? They know that when they raided Epstein's mansion in Manhattan, that they found a large cache of video recordings with the name of one of his girl victims on the DVD, along with the name of other people who were participating in the video. And probably these are prominent names. Almost everybody is aware that his various mansions were riddled with cameras where these illicit activities took place. So these are the blackmail recordings, blackmail videos, that appear to be the main purpose of Epstein's entire operation. And yet, nobody in the media is asking, okay, they found these videos. Where are they? Who's on them? Total silence. Okay, who has the videos now? Who controls them now? These things are worth billions in terms of not only of money, but in terms of the power they give to anyone who possesses them. And yet it's just total silence. Now, how can anybody have confidence in that? It's obviously a whole series of lies and cover-ups, and the blackmail continues, and yet now it's a non-story. So there you go. That's my take on that.
Yeah, that it's almost like a story of the Three Stooges was guarding Epstein when they were rolling out this information. And of course, when it's a story like this, it's kind of like the Las Vegas massacre. They just drop it like a hot potato. They moved on there in the next week to labeling Donald Trump white supremacist or something because the Russian collusion hoax had fell apart. And you're right about one thing. I think the American people and the world, they've lost all the government of the United States has lost all credibility. Nobody believes them. When they say Iran has sent drones and bombed hit Saudi Arabia, I immediately think that it's absolutely not that. Then, and the news media in America too, and of course a lot of that Donald Trump going around saying fake news all the time has helped. But the news media in America, I don't know anyone that really has any faith in the news media in America reporting accurately, but they don't report. The Yellow Vest protests are still going on. They don't report on that. They don't report on what's actually happening in Germany with regards to crime and the unbelievable, horrific events that take place against the native population by the refugees. They leave all of that purposely out so that the American people are unaware. You know, I tell people that, you know, if you watch the news, if you don't watch the news, you're uninformed, and if you do watch the news, you're misinformed. You know, so that's where they want you to be. Well, we've got about 7 minutes left, and I wanted to give you the opportunity to discuss any issues that you might would want to, any updates that's going on with the National Alliance, or any topic that you would like to share with the listeners.
Well, let me just start by saying I agree with you. What's happening is a filtering effect. It's sort of like Darwinian natural selection. The more intelligent people can't believe the fake stories put out by the Jewish-run media. They're increasingly unbelievable to people with critical intelligence. And, for example, let's just say talk about these hearings about white nationalism. Now, the Jewish groups like the ADL and the SPLC were saying something along the lines of all the extremist-related killings in the last 5 years, most of them, for the first time, are done by white supremacists. Well, that statistic, number one, they're putting so many qualifications on the words and the fact that it has to be an extremist-related killing. What the heck is that? They're just manipulating statistics. The truth is if one guy, the guy who went into Pittsburgh and started shooting in the synagogue there, hadn't done what he did, that the three-quarters of the numbers they were quoting wouldn't even be there. Three-quarters of those numbers are dependent on one guy. Anybody who does a little research can find out that so-called white nationalists have probably killed fewer people in the last 20 years than the falls in bathtubs or members of the American Legion. It's just, it's ridiculous, and almost anybody can see through it. So this selective process that's going on is between the people who have critical thinking skills and people who don't have critical thinking skills. The people who are dumber and don't have critical thinking skills, they believe the media. They keep going along with whatever their latest Stalinist agenda is, the latest crazy spin on things. But the more intelligent people are beginning to see that the Jewish media lie, and they're coming over to us. They're becoming racial nationalists, or some of them are becoming anti-Zionist leftists who have a very deep of the Jewish power structure. And there's a lot of commonality between those two groups, and I think it's a new schism that is a good one. It's a good selective process that's going on, and it's ultimately going to redound to the benefit of people who don't want our country controlled and managed by subversive Jews, which it is now. So I think that's all a good thing. Well, the National Alliance is working every day to build awareness of this problem, to build a consciousness among white people that we need our own nation again, and that we have every right to our own nation somewhere on earth. And one of the things we're doing is we are preserving the great works of men like Dr. William Pierce and Dr. Revel Oliver and many, many other great authors whose works have been tossed in the trash can by the modern libraries and by colleges and universities. These are people they'd like to consign to the memory hole. So we've started a project to build a library, a physical library, based on several libraries that our chairman, Will Williams, has acquired. Dr. Pierce's library, certain items from the Revel Oliver library, and several other libraries, large libraries, accumulated by significant figures and intellectuals in the racial nationalist cause. And we're going to be building a building we've broken ground down in Tennessee so that scholars and writers can come and be in residence and use these works and preserve them, and we'll have a staff to digitize the best of them and make them live on forever. So the National Alliance has got a lot going on. What we do need is more support. We've got 250,000 people reading our website every month, every month in the last year, and yet we only have a few hundred people, not thousands. We need hundreds of thousands, not just hundreds, who are supporting us financially. What we could do if we had more support. So I encourage people to go to natall.com, N-A-T-A-L-L.com, and donate. Look into membership, see what the benefits of membership are, both for your people and for yourself. And or if you don't have a computer, if you're listening on the radio, and by the way, congratulations to you on getting on a new network, in addition to what you've been doing in the past, getting more listeners than ever. But you can write to us in an old-fashioned way. You can write to P.O. Box 4, that's National Alliance, P.O. Box 4, Mountain City, Tennessee, abbreviated TN, 37683. I look forward to hearing from people.
Well, Kevin, I appreciate it so much. I always look forward to interviewing you. You have a clarity on reality, I think, that people really do appreciate, and I do for one. And you're welcome here anytime when you have time. If you have a Saturday you're free, you shoot me a text or give me a call. Happy to have you on anytime, and we certainly should do this at opportunities when it's available. I'd love to have you on once a month or at least every 2 months. But again, thanks for all your work and everything that you've done and are doing, and I really appreciate you joining me today, sir.
Thank you, Farron. It's a joy to talk to you. It has been too long, and we'll try to do it more often. All the best to you.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to my interview on the Alternative Media, hosted by Farron Shouf, right here on American Dissident Voices.